නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. Dear Dhamma friends, probably you can remember last week we discussed about Chula Sunyata Sutta, the minor discourse on the voidness. And today I thought of going to the next one, that is called Mahasunyata Sutta, the greater discourse on voidness. So these are actually fairly advanced suttas, and again talking deeply about the vipassana practice and how to maximize it, how to cultivate it, how to enhance it. So therefore it is quite relevant to the yogis who are dealing with their vipassana practices, and therefore we can pay close attention to these suttas. And if we start from the beginning, so at one time Buddha was living in Kapilavastu in Nigrodha's park, and that is his own area, where Kapilavastu is where Buddha has born as Prince Siddhartha, and he was dwelling there, and it belongs to Sakyans. And then while he was there, and after his meal, he returned to Kala Khemaka. That's a seems kind of a dwelling place where he went there, and he saw that many bhikkhus live there. Actually, there are growth happened in the sasana, and there are many bhikkhus, many monks started to attract towards the sasana. And now at this time, there are many monks available, and they are dwelling. And therefore, in this particular garden, there are many places were prepared for them. And actually, while they are, then Buddha meet Venerable Ananda, and then he made a comment that he has seen many places prepared for monks dwelling. And Buddha inquire, are there many monks living here? And Ananda, there are many resting places prepared in Kala Khemaka, the Sakyans dwelling. Do many bhikkhus live there? So Buddha inquired from Venerable Ananda. And then Venerable Ananda mentioned, Venerable Sir, many resting places have been prepared in Kala Khemaka, the Sakyans dwelling. Many bhikkhus are living there. This is our time for making robes. So there are several activities involved with the monk's life, and preparing robes is one of the important things. And particularly after the end of Vassa, it is the time. Usually offerings are happening at the end of the Vassa. So at that time, so if monks receive clothes and maybe robes, so after that they spend fair amount of time preparing those robes. So therefore the next month, just after the Vassa period, is sometimes called as Chivara Masa. Chivara is the robe, and that's the month for robes. So at this time, Venerable Ananda informed the Buddha that yes, there are many monks involved, many places are prepared, because now we are preparing robes. And then actually Buddha didn't recommend that, or Buddha didn't approve it. Rather, Buddha tell an entirely different point. Buddha mentioned, a bhikkhu does not shine by delighting in company, by taking delight in company, and devoting himself to delight in company, delighting in society, by taking delight in the society, by rejoicing in society. Now Buddha is looking at from a different angle, and he points out that if a particular monk is delighted in company, having company with many other monks, and if he is having an idea of socializing, being in the society and working and involving with various society activities, so then Buddha mentioned that such bhikkhu is not really shining. Now, typically we sometimes see the opposite. Actually, when monks are involved with so many activities, maybe a lot of social work, and there are many devotees coming after them, well respected, and they are very much renowned, and maybe very popular, So that is how we typically measure their progress or their achievement or their success. But the opposite is mentioned here by the Buddha. Buddha mentioned, if any monk who is delighted in company and who is devoting himself to the company and again delighted in the society and like to be socialized and like to be with many many others, so such bhikkhu is not really shining. So we can see the proper situation is quite opposite to what we understand. Typically we think the growth or the progress or the success of someone, even for a monk, can be measured when he become popular and he is well respected by the whole society and everyone knows him. So that is how we think that he is quite a successful monk. But Buddha actually mentioned the opposite. Buddha mentioned, if he is really purposely rejoicing, purposely delighting with this company, with the society and the social work, then he is not really shining. And he further mentioned, if a monk is behaving like that, then it is very difficult to have the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, and the bliss of enlightenment. Now these achievements are quite opposite to the typical mundane way of looking at things. And the achievements, the spiritual attainments, are specially focused on the seclusion and then renunciation and bliss of peace and bliss of enlightenment. So these are, Buddha mentioned, impossible for a monk who is delighted in the society, delighted in the company, and who is engaged with various social activities. And it is impossible, he mentioned, to have those said achievements easily for a such monk. So he will obtain at will, without trouble or difficulty, the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, of this all, the bliss of enlightenment is quite impossible. And on the opposite, if someone is away from the society, not getting involved with various social activities, not getting involved with too much company, who likes to be alone, who likes to be secluded, so such a bhikkhu is possible to have those spiritual, maybe achievements, enlightenment, bliss of renunciation, bliss of seclusion, so those are possible. And further Buddha mentioned, if one is basically delighted in the society, delighted in the company, for such a person, for such a monk, abide in either the deliverance of mind, that is temporary and delectable, or in the deliverance of mind, that is perpetual and unshakable, that is also impossible. Now these are certain ways that the Dhamma explained about the achievement, either in the jhana, that is the mundane type of concentrations, or the other side, those are the supramundane, lokottara type of achievements. So the first one mentions, samayikangva kantang chetoimutti. So there are various types of chetoimutti, the freedom of mind, and they either can be samatha, the tranquility-based concentrations, and tranquility-based freedom, and the opposite, there are vipassana type of concentrations, freedoms, and those can be considered as supramundane. So Buddha mentioned either side is not possible. When a particular monk who is quite engaged with social activities, fond of being socialized and delighted in the company, for such a monk, such kind of an achievement, either mundane type of spiritual achievement is not possible, and on the other hand, supramundane type of attainment is also not possible. So these are interesting points at the very beginning we can understand. So Buddha's teaching therefore highlights fair amount of secluded practice. So that is why people, say especially the lay people, time to time engage with retreat situations where they leave their homes, their cities, towns, there are jobs, and stay in a forest monastery. So forest actually gives us such a conducive atmosphere for the practice where there are no any agitative factors available. So what is available is the very simple forest environment, and that doesn't provocate one's mind. Instead, that's kind of an environment really heals the mind, really calms the mind. So therefore, that is always encouraged for the practice. And further, Buddha mentioned that this is a temporary and delectable, or the deliverance of mind that is perpetual and unshakable. So these are two forms. So there may be people who are practicing, maybe, for example, metta, loving kindness. So if they practice loving kindness for a long time, systematically, they can actually come to a fairly high state of mind, what we can say as the freedom of mind, cheto vimutti, using metta, metta cheto vimutti, where they are able to free their mind while keeping the loving kindness as the base. They start with loving kindness and slowly they enhance it, and slowly they enhance even to various directions, various groups of people, and ultimately without any restriction, so they can pervade metta to the whole directions. So it's very much like a universal type of metta, loving kindness. On such situation we can say, okay, his mind is freed through how? Through loving kindness. So similarly, one can make the mind free through altruistic joy, mudita, through compassion, that is the karuna, and through equanimity, that is the upekkha. And there are other methods as well. Say if one is practicing arupa jhana, the immaterial jhanas, so those also are boundless jhanas, and those also actually helps one's mind to get free. But on the other hand, these are quite temporary. Even though they are very heightened, quite deep concentration levels, but still their availability is quite conditioned. So if one practices diligently, and if one is able to maintain such concentration, and then only one can have it, one can enjoy it. But on the other hand, if one cannot practice frequently, or if one couldn't practice due to certain reasons, say for example, if one gets sick, he couldn't engage with the practice. So on such situation, such high samatha concentration starts to decline, starts to decay, and ultimately they disappear. So one is not now attained the jhana as before. Now there are such similar cases explained in the various suttas. Certain monks are basically capable of attaining jhana, but later due to some reason they couldn't. So then sometimes they regret not being able to attain jhana. Then Buddha come and advise them and telling jhana is not the ultimate. So there are many things which are prominent in Buddha's dispensation. And there are other things that we can check when it comes to the vipassana side, where one achieves a temporary kind of freedom. It is not the complete liberation that one may achieve immediately. So with the practice of vipassana, one may undergo certain development of wisdom. And when such wisdom has developed to a certain extent, that releases the mind. So that release is actually a temporary release, temporary freedom. So that is why it is mentioned here, mind that is temporary and delectable. So that temporary release is also a very important thing, because that assures such temporary release is available. Now, constantly our mind is engaged with various activities, various graspings and attachments. But with the vipassana practice, one can weaken that attachment, and on top of that, one may introduce a fair amount of wisdom, and due to those factors, one's mind get temporarily freed. So such temporary freedom one has to appreciate, one has to improve, one has to increase. So that is what actually we have to discuss even today. Anyway, even such is not possible for a monk who are delighted in the company, delighted in the society. But on the other hand, if one is delighted in the seclusion, one does not really approve one's engagement with so many other people, with the society or the company, then Buddha mentioned it is possible to have that. This doesn't mean that throughout the whole life one has to be alone, one has to live a secluded life, not getting involved with the society at all. Rather, you can do a kind of a limited experiment while keeping safety. For example, if one is able to develop a fair amount of vipassana, if one constantly or continuously staying alone and practicing alone, that is also might produce some kind of restricted mind state, where mind is not really seasoned to various ups and downs of the life. So therefore, we have to practically look at the situation. If one is now confident that one has able to achieve fair amount of understanding and fair amount of wisdom, and as a result of that one's mind get temporarily freed, and that also can be maintained quite for a long time, then one can actually put oneself into the society and see how it is reacting, and whether one is able to bear it, and whether one is able to quickly recover if in case there are certain negative mind states arise, if one is able to quickly recover. So these things actually we have to practically experience and see. So therefore we have to manage this depending on the situation, depending on our level of practice. But on the other hand, in general, one has to have a secluded life so that one is able to look at oneself and to understand what are the drawbacks still one has, shortcomings still one has, and then properly address them, properly improve the certain necessary qualities. Now, after telling that, Buddha further mentioned about some other aspect about the practice. He mentioned any kind of form. I do not see even a single kind of form, another from the change and alteration of which there would not arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. Now, typically, when we consider various different kinds of forms, starting with our body, and when we look at someone else's body, and when we look at various beautiful sights available throughout the world, so we may derive certain amount of happiness through them, by looking at them. But here Buddha mentioned, so all those are subjected to change. So you can't maintain whatever the beautiful sights constantly for a long time. They are subjected to change. So when such change happen, if one's mind is not properly developed, so such change makes a huge impact on one's mind. So as a result of that, one start to cry, one start to become sorrowful, and pain, lamentation happens, kind of a grief happen, kind of a despair happen in one's mind. So therefore Buddha mentioned, typically if we simply continue a mundane and really involved, indulgent kind of life, then of course as a result of the change of various forms, one's mind get really disappointed. Actually, this is true for various sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations and thoughts. On the other hand, this particular point, forms can be represented as the rupakkhanda, the material aggregate, and therefore the same situation is common to various feelings, various perceptions, various mental formations and various kinds of consciousness. So whatever all these aggregates are subject to change. Typically what happens is we attach to them, either one of them or too many of them, thinking that they may provide us fair amount of happiness, fair amount of satisfaction, and they may not change. So this is the wrong perversion we have. So because of this perversion, we consider These five aggregates are mine, myself. This is I. And but on the other hand, once we attach to them, we think they may behave as we wish. But unfortunately, they behave the way they want. They are subjected to change. They are subjected to oppression. As a result of that, they start to change, and ultimately, if we attach to them, we are going to suffer. And here, Buddha mentioned about certain aspects of the voidness, sunyata, where Buddha mentioned there is this abiding discovered by the Tathagata. To enter and abide in voidness internally by giving no attention to all signs. Now, no attention to all signs. So this indicates signless concentration, animitta samadhi. So there are signs available, but one's attention is not given to them. So this is a very practical point Buddha highlights here. So sometimes people expect to maintain their eyes closed and to get on to a very deep concentration in order to achieve signless concentration. Actually, that is also possible at the beginning, and that also has to be enhanced. But later, at one time, at one point, one has to change that procedure. Actually, if we consider how one achieve signless concentration, that is also quite relevant to this point. Suppose if I consider Dhatu Manasikara, how one is practicing elements meditation, say he is walking, is in the walking path, and he is able to maintain mindfulness. And as a result of that, he is able to look at various sensations happening at his foot, at his soles. And those may be hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, and lightness. Or kind of flowing or fluidity, and maybe the cohesion. And it may be heat or cold. And it may be the movement or the bearing of the whole thing. Now, if one is able to recognize these very fundamental qualities attributed to the four elements, then that indicates that one's attention has fairly focused and he was able to let go of all the notions of the society, was able to let go of all the notions of his friends and other whoever the colleagues, and he is able to achieve seclusion. Without achieving seclusion, one can't reach this. Probably you may staying in a retreat environment, there may be 100 participants. But unless you are able to seclude by yourself, you can't achieve it. So that's why it requires a fair amount of practice, because otherwise we start to think about our neighbors, we start to think about our co-practitioners, we start to measure ourselves with them, and we may even complain that they are not good. And there are many shortcomings in the retreat. And the food is not good. Lodging is not good. Teaching is not good. How we are treated is not good. So likewise, we start to complain because we are still attached with so many environmental factors. So as we discuss in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, so we have to let go of those perceptions gradually. So while we are at the city or the town, so we have so many perceptions in our mind. So we have to go to supermarket, we have to buy various stuff. So those activities are available in our mind. And maybe we have to look after our children, to our, say, parents. There are a lot of obligations. So there are many perceptions related to those. And if we are involved with working, so with respect to workplace, there are so many perceptions in the mind. And then we have so many perceptions related to the society, the political situation, the government, etc., etc. So our minds are quite occupied. Once we come to the monastery, to the Aranya, to the forest, so we should try our best to let go of all those commitments, all those memories and perceptions. Now, what one has right now is just the perceptions related to the monastery. It may be the animals, it may be the food, it may be the practice. Very limited kind of perceptions have to be there in your mind. And when one is able to further practice, suppose now one is practicing Anapanasati, So then one is able to let go of all those perceptions related to the monastery, and one is able to pay attention one's body to one's body. Now, at that time, actually we know, okay, only the perceptions pertaining to the body is available and everything else has gone. Now, if one refines one's attention only to a particular element, suppose it's the heat element that you are paying attention. If you are paying attention to heat element with full awareness, well-focused mind, then all the other three elements have disappeared. You are not paying any attention to those. So, likewise, we have to practice Dhatu Manasikara in order to pay attention to each element. And when one is able to achieve or recognize each element using their characteristics, like hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, and heaviness and lightness, say for example for the earth element, so if one is able to understand those characteristics, so that means that one is able to recognize earth element. Now likewise, one has to practice element meditation to other elements as well, and one is now able to recognize various element characteristics available in one's own body. Suppose that one is continuing this, then further one can apply the same knowledge to the outside. So then one is able to understand, it's not only the internally, but even outside, externally, one can understand only the four elements. Now everywhere it's nothing but four elements. So likewise, if one is able to expand one's understanding, and then after that, one can bring back one's attention to the body, and further investigation will show him that these elements are constantly changing. They are not permanent. They are subject to change. They are quite brittle, vulnerable, always changing. So that understanding is significant in one's practice. So it may be mostly the impermanence that one may notice. How quickly they are changing, how quickly they are arising and passing away. So this is the understanding actually triggers one's vipassana practice. So if one is able to understand these impermanent characteristics, so as a result of impermanence, one may understand these are suffering, unsatisfactory. One can't have permanent happiness in the materialistic world, because they are subjected to change, and that change is beyond our control. Now, when one is able to continue one's practice further and further, so understanding of impermanence will grow. One may understand, okay, these, whatever the elements, are constantly changing, constantly arising and passing away very quickly. So that very quick process, or very rapid process, avoids one from taking signs, avoids one from recognizing the color or recognizing the shape or the depth. So on the other hand, now one is understanding the rapidity of the process, one's attention is fairly focused, and one's resolution is very high. But due to the rapid impermanence, rapid change, one is now capable of perceiving what is really going on, capable of recognizing what is really going on, because it is so fast. Now what happens, because of this rapid change, one can't take signs of the shape, one can't take signs of the color. As a result of that, now mind become quite dispassionate about the process, because it is not beautiful. What is happening is not attractive, and one can understand it, one can recognize it, but it doesn't entice the mind, it doesn't enjoy the mind, it doesn't trigger the mind. Rather, mind may feel quite bored. Kind of a monotony is available now, because what is happening is universal. And throughout the body, one can't now distinctly recognize each and every element. Rather, what one's mind may experience is nothing but the change. It's a rapid change, rapid arising and passing away, very quick arising and passing away. It's common to all the elements, and now the yogi can't distinguish one element from the other. Now, if one has reached this kind of a stage, so then one's mind gets freed through animitta cheto samadhi. Animitta, that is the kind of a freedom, or sometimes we call as the door of freedom, and vimokka mukha. And one may be able to understand the situation more deeply by letting go of all the processes, because they are quite changing, rapidly changing, so one is unable to take signs of those. Shape, colors particularly, one can't recognize because so speed, so rapid, so fast. Now this achievement is something significant, and on the other hand, still it is quite temporary. After a moment, again mind go and grasp. Because mind is habituated to grasp. Mind's nature is grasping. But now mind has sort of experienced very short period of freedom or unattachment or non-grasping. But one can't maintain it for a long time because of the influence of defilements. Now anyway, one is continuing the practice. Same procedure one may continue. As a result of that, again the mind become free. Again one continue one's practice. As a result of the practice, again mind become free. Now when it happens continuously, repeatedly, so this freedom, one may start to notice. Now it is available for 5 minutes. Then one is further developing, now it is available for 10 minutes. One is further developing, now it is available for 20 minutes. So likewise, once this temporary freedom has to be enhanced. So this is a temporary freedom. This temporary freedom has to be enhanced. So ultimately, suppose one is able to maintain such freedom for 1 hour, so that definitely indicates one's mind has full registered this process. This state of mind is well registered now in the mind. Now, so this is where we say, okay, one has achieved the animitta samadhi, signless concentration. So this is something that Buddha's teaching really highlights, and that is why Buddha mentioned, however Ananda, there is this abiding discovered by the Tathagata to enter and abide in voidness internally by giving no attention to all signs. Sabbanimittanam amanasikaro. Sabbanimittanam amanasikara ajjattam sunyatam upasampajja viharatim. So, without paying attention to any of the signs throughout the world, one is now living peacefully internally and that is, one can say it is the animitta cheto samadhi, animitta samadhi, or one can say sunyata samadhi, so it is highlighted as sunyata. Here particularly the animitta, if one is seeing the what you call the rapid change of the elements, then what one achieves is the animitta. But on the other hand, if one go through the understanding of suffering, one may understand the what you call appanihita, the desireless concentration. If one understand deeply how things are impersonal, how there is no self, things are happening but there is no inner core, there is no anything substantial. So if such understanding develops, so what is developing is the understanding of non-self. So if that is prominent, one's mind gets freed through sunyata, the emptiness. Now, Buddha mentioned here a very interesting point. Tathagata is abiding thus. Now Buddha has entered that emptiness and now he is living there. And he is delighted there. Now his mind likes to stay empty. His mind likes to associate emptiness. And he likes to stay quiet stay secluded without any association. And interestingly, Buddha mentioned here, there are bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, men or women, by lay followers, kings, kings ministers, other sectarians or their disciples. They are coming and sometimes trying to bother the Buddha while his mind is quite aligned or quite fond of or inclined towards that sunyata, inclined towards that seclusion, delighting in renunciation. And so that is where his mind is now attuned to, inclined towards, but unfortunately these people are coming and asking various questions. They are trying to disturb the Buddha. Then Buddha mentioned, he invariably talks to them in a way concerned with dismissing them. So rather than encouraging this discussion, so Buddha may talk in order to dismiss them. Now you can see kind of a different point here. Typically Buddha is recognized as the first talking person. Now if someone is coming to meet him, so rather than the visitor start talking, Buddha welcomes him. And he go through a kind of a cordial discussion before going to the subject matter, before going to deeper teachings or deeper problem solution. Here Buddha do a kind of a welcome to whoever who coming to meet the Buddha. But here it is mentioned the opposite. He is not really welcoming the visitors at this point, because his mind is quite inclined towards emptiness, being in the emptiness, attuned towards the emptiness. So at that time, even a king comes, Buddha doesn't really welcome him. Rather, he makes a very short, maybe discussion we can say, in order to dismiss the king. If there is a merchant coming, if there's a bhikkhu coming, bhikkhuni coming, whatever it is, whoever it is, Buddha doesn't encourage the discussion. Rather, he wants to quickly finish it, dismiss it. Therefore, Ananda, if a bhikkhu should wish, may I enter upon and abide in voidness internally, he should steady his mind internally, quiet it, bring it to signless, singleness, and concentrate it. And so if another bhikkhu also wants to live in the emptiness, and if he want to quiet the mind and have some internal silence, so they also have to continue kind of a secluded life and to be away from and not to get involved with sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states. A bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, the fourth jhana. So now Buddha explain how one is developing the signless or the emptiness using jhana. Now this is the samatha oriented practice explained at the beginning. So rather than immediately going for vipassana practice, so first the samatha is explained here. So that is how it is developed at this level. But anyway, it doesn't mean that one can't achieve it purely through vipassana. One can do it, but here according to the sutta, so one may start to experience certain amount of concentration. It may be the first jhana, it may be the second jhana, it may be the third jhana, it may be the fourth jhana. So this is a temporary bliss one may experience. So as you can remember, if one's mind is quite delighted in the company, delighted in the society, then one can't even achieve such kind of a mundane type of concentration. First jhana, second jhana, those are mundane concentrations. But if one's mind is quite delighted in the company, delighted in the society, one can't even achieve it. Actually, this is quite obvious. Now, there are many monks living in the, say, society, living in the city, who have so many commitments towards the lay people and so many engagements, so they don't have enough time to practice and they can't enjoy this kind of bliss, which is only possible through renunciation, possible through seclusion. And now further Buddha explains how to convert these states into voidness. Then he gives attention to voidness internally. Now, if one is going through concentration practice, how to attain the voidness? So that is another way of achieving voidness. So one has to emerge from the mundane jhana, and after that one has to look at various mental states. It may be the jhana factors. It may be how mind was applying one's mind again and again to the jhana object or the concentration object. Or it may be the vichara, the sustained attention which was available at that time while one is in the jhana, assume it's first jhana. So, but now it is not there. It may be the kind of rapturous feelings, it may be the comfortable feelings, it may be the singleness of the mind, ekagata. So those are the certain qualities, important qualities available in the jhana. So after emerging from jhana, one can recognize that those have gone, those have disappeared. And not only that, there may be various little different kinds of feelings still arising. And through his well-concentrated mind, through his well-refined mind, one may be able to recognize these different mental states or these different mental factors, chetasika. So by recognizing this, one may understand very refined way that these mental states are quite vulnerable, quite impermanent, and they are quickly arising and passing away. And while one looks at these various mental factors, how they are quickly arising and passing away, assume that once one is now paying attention to one's own mind, observing one's own mind, and there are different kinds of mental states quickly appear and disappear. And when one may pay attention to something, but that mind which is paying attention is also impermanent, it is quickly arising and passing away. Say for example, there are various element characteristics available in the body and you are looking at them. But this mind which is looking at them also not permanent. They are also, those mind states are also quite changing, quickly arising and passing away. So if one is able to understand the mental states, the thoughts or the mental factors, how quickly they arise and pass away, so one may realize the impermanence using the mental factors, using the jhana factors. So those are the subject of meditation right now in Vipassana here. And when one understands that deeply, one may understand, okay, these are extremely vulnerable, extremely impermanent, quickly arising and passing away. So this arising and passing away knowledge now develops through the mind. So if one is continue one's practice, so there may be a situation one can't recognize these mental states, these mental factors, how quickly they are rising and passing away, because now mind has become somewhat dispassionate towards the process, and the process also very rapid. As a result of that, now mind can't take signs. Mind can't understand which mental quality this is, which mental factor it is. So those information has lost. And now mind becomes secluded and attain signless concentration. Or similarly, may attain the sunyata, the emptiness concentration. If one may understand in the mind, in this process, there is no soul, there is no self, there is nothing substantial. So as a result of that, the significant understanding of non-self may lead to the emptiness. So internally, actually, one may observe these various mental factors and which leads to the emptiness or the signless. But here, in the first case, Buddha mentioned that due to some reason, the monk couldn't achieve it. So this is how successfully one may achieve it. But due to maybe less concentration, due to lack of clear comprehension, lack of time that one has to develop that momentum, one couldn't achieve emptiness, one couldn't achieve signless. So therefore, very practically Buddha explains this. So previously assumed that one was able to achieve such signless concentration, but unfortunately now he tried to do the same thing but failed. Quite practically he is explaining. So while he is giving attention to voidness internally, his mind does not enter into voidness internally or acquire confidence, steadiness and decision. So he is trying, but what not successful. He is getting failed. And if one is, say for example, if one has properly registered this process and was able to experience this voidness for say 1 hour, now assume that without going through the practice, one immediately want to put one's mind into this voidness. So that is also possible. When one's understanding is deep and defilements are weak. But unless such is not available, then one get failed. One may try to put one's mind into voidness, but quickly bounce back. Quickly get failed. So we can assume that Buddha is explaining such thing because he tried to quickly put his mind into voidness, giving attention to voidness internally, but his mind does not enter into voidness internally, or acquire confidence, steadiness and decision. When that is so, he understands thus, while I am giving attention to voidness internally, my mind does not enter into voidness internally, or acquire confidence, steadiness and decision. In this way, he has full awareness of that. So this is how he is now cultivating, he is mastering this voidness. Actually through voidness he is mastering his mind, understanding what various factors which is blocking the voidness, which is hindering the voidness. They are nothing but defilements, but he is by himself, he is investigating. So actually the sutta continues with various other things. Let's discuss those things later. So this is how one may enter to the practice by mastering voidness and using voidness to understand one's defilements. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's sutta teaching, because this triggers a lot of questions maybe to the others, to the practitioners. So I'd like to open a session for questions now.
We have a couple of new friends that's joining us for the first time, so welcome. And for those that's not familiar, to participate in the Q&A session right now, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them to me anonymously via chat. Bente, so I have a question. So as a practitioner continues with this practice and starts to be released, right, from the various senses, is he or she still very much aware of the arising of these senses, or do the passing away of these senses, does the mind then turn away from these senses and starts to, not notice them as much? And I mean, I guess the reason for that question is I feel like as I'm continuing my practice, it's hard to distinguish what the mind is actually paying attention to, and sometimes it feels like as if there's not much there, but the mind is just aware.
Correct.
So I hope that question is clear.
Yes. So basically that is how we perceive it. So at the beginning we perceive that now mind is very precisely watching each and every phenomena, how quickly they are arising and passing away. So we get happy, we become happy by seeing the arising and passing away. So that is one happiness mentioned. amanusi rati hoti pasato udayabhyam. So one, when one see the rising and passing away very quickly, how things are rising and passing away, there's a kind of a happiness arising in oneself. But when we continue at this practice again and again for a long time, then actually mind starts to become dispassionate about the process. Now one doesn't feel quite happy, but one may feel little bored about the process, or one may not that interested about the process, and you may not see the boundaries in the process. Various phenomena become somewhat blurred. So sometimes we presume that this is because of weakening of our mindfulness, or our weakening of whatever another faculty. So likewise, we get kind of wrong assumptions. But here actually what really happened is because mind has seen it enough, seen the impermanent nature quite deeply, now the process become somewhat not interested. Mind get little dispassionate about the process. Mind likes to stay alone. Mind likes to be away from the process. Mind doesn't want to get involved with the process. Mind withdraw from the process. So that is how mind get properly aligned with the seclusion, where the processes may be available, but mind is not involving with them. Mind is not interested with them. Mind doesn't want to go and look at them. And mind doesn't have anything at all at that time. So that is another point. Now typically what happens is, when one's mind is not interested of one thing, it go and grasp another thing. So this is the typically what this is what typically happens. Say you are looking at a form which is quite beautiful, you are looking at it for a long time, now you become bored. As a result of that, what happens? You go and grasp another thing. Suppose now you are going and listen to music because you are fed up of the sight. Now you are enjoying the music. If you get bored in music, again you go and grasp something different. Now you again go and watch a movie. So this is what typically happens. But here, one may watch a very rapid process for a certain period of time. As a result of that, mind get dispassionate and mind get withdraw from the process, but it doesn't attach to anything at all. It doesn't grasp anything at all. So this is how mind totally become free. Without getting reattached, it now simply stay alone, stay as freed. So this actually yogi may experience at the beginning, maybe like a little bit of boredom or withdrawing from the observation, having kind of a seclusion, sort of let go of everything and have one's own freedom. So different way one may perceive. Hope I clarified your question, Jennifer.
Yes, Bhante. Thank you. I guess at this point it's just
a continuation. Just the continuation and just being with it. Because we need to somewhat familiarize with this boredom. Actually, how we avoid boredom is by triggering the mind with various forms, by triggering the mind with various sounds, by triggering the mind with various smells, tastes, touch and thoughts. But now here, there is nothing to trigger the mind, nothing to burn the mind, or nothing to, disturb the mind. So mind slowly get used to its own freedom. Mind slowly get used to be alone. So this is something that we have to slowly teach it. Allow it to understand its own seclusion.
Thank you, Bhante. Yeah, I don't experience boredom.
Mm-hmm.
I think I experience more just tranquility and
correct.
Just a neutral state of mind.
Good. Yes, yes.
So, okay. All right, thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Chita Devi for the next question, please.
Thank you, Jennifer. Now, Bhante, I also don't actually experience boredom, so I know many times our teachers talk about boredom, so I don't know whether that's I'm doing something not correct or whatever it is, but I go into a level where I am in a very extremely comfortable situation, and I'm happy to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Without much disturbance. So I mean, and I'm happy to be there. Of course, I have to get up because of our commitments.
Right.
But I can stay for long periods. So I don't know where what that is called or whatever it is.
No, actually, boredom may happen sometimes when you are staying there for a long time. Say, if you are staying there just for 10 minutes, you may not experience it. But say you are staying there for 30 minutes, 45 minutes. So even after the emergence of the from that samadhi, so you feel like staying on your chair, on your cushion.
Yeah.
You don't like to move your finger. So likewise, some sort of boredom happen.
Because now I can sit from the start to the beginning, even after 2 hours.
Hmm.
And I'm extremely comfortable, and of course, suddenly you come out of it. I don't know. Automatically, I think somehow.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a very comfortable space.
It's correct.
You know?
Correct. Yes.
So that's how it is. But the real question I want to ask was you said in the last bit that when the Buddha said, go into the jhanas and go into that concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, the Buddha said, internally you get quietness and voidness internally. And
mm-hmm.
Then he gives a principle to voidness internally. Then you said, when we are doing, we can change that to vipassana and looking at impermanence and the mental states and mental factors.
Mm-hmm.
Which come and go quickly, you say.
Correct.
And soon the mind can't see these signs, and then you can sort of contemplate on non-self and then voidness and sunyata. I mean, I think I understood it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on these mental states and mental factors that you were talking about? Can you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
Yeah. Now, say for example, one is achieving a first jhana. So in order to achieve first jhana, so, first of all, assume that you are practicing Anapanasati, and again and again you are watching the breath, and after continuing your practice, so it's the emergence of what you call the Anapanasati Nimitta, the kind of a sign, concentration sign may appear, and now you are watching it again and again. So, your mind is again and again applied to that concentration sign. Again and again your mind getting applied to that concentration sign. And you are sort of doing a little bit of investigation as well in the concentration side. So as you continue like this, so automatically mind get absorbed to this process, and very subtle application may happen again and again. Very subtle application. It is not that you are you are bringing your mind back and putting onto the sign, this concentration sign, in a more gross manner, but mind itself is doing it. It's kind of an automatic process. Again and again, there is a little bit of movement in the mind. It is like little bit of jumping out, again mind puts it back. Again, little bit of jumping out, again putting it back. Now, this is the vitakka. And
yes.
while the mind is staying there, a little bit of movement inside. So that is the vichara. And there may be a little bit of happiness, that is the piti. And there may be you feel quite comfortable, that is the sukha. And other than this process, nothing else is there, that is the ekagata. Now these are the jhana factors with respect to first jhana. Now, without deeply absorbed to the process, without deeply absorbed to the object, if you are able to little come out of it and looking at the process, then you may understand the operation of jhana factors. How vitakka works, how vichara works, how piti works, how comfort, the sukha works, and how ekagata works. And there may be other mental factors as well. Now, if you go to Abhidhamma explanations, there are other around 33 mental factors involved in the whole, what you call in the first jhana. Now, this, point what we need to understand here is you can recognize these mental factors only when your mind is sharp to the level of laser beam. Just to give an example, because it's a so refined state of mind, and the mind has to be in a very sharp mindfulness in order to recognize these mental states, these mental factors. So that is why the samatha based vipassana requires very refined samatha practice, fair amount of concentration, and after emerge from that concentration, those activity, very subtle activity available in the mind may be visible. So when one see this for a long time, these little activities, very subtle activities, very quick activities inside the mind, through the mind one may understand impermanence. Through the mind one may understand rising and passing away. So these mental factors are not kind of a constant. Rather, they quickly arise and pass away. They quickly arise and pass away. This quick succession of arising and passing away, interpret as kind of a continuous process. Hope you got the point. I mean, when assume that when again and again your mind is applied to the object again and again, you feel like kind of a continuity. But it's a kind of a very rapid arising and passing away. What really happens? But because of its rapidity, we perceive it as kind of a ongoing continuous process. But with refined attention, you may understand it is not so. It is quickly arising and passing away. So as you are continuing this practice, you understand the impermanence, and slowly this process become blurred, and your mind get withdrawn from the process and find the internal emptiness. Now mind is not looking at the process. Rather, mind likes to stay alone, letting go of the process and not attaching to anything else, just being alone. So this is the internal achievement of the emptiness if we explain it with respect to first jhana.
So Bhante, you spoke of mental states and mental factors, right? So the mental factors you said was the vitakka vichara,
ekagata.
Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So when you talk of mental states,
so
what
that
do you mean by that?
Mean, say, kind of a happiness available, so kind of a perception available, so such kind of states, I generally talk as mental states. So what is coming?
Emotional.
Oh, exactly.
More
into the sankhara, more into the mental, the volitional side, the mental formations.
Well, states.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I understand.
Yeah.
So because last time you said, you know, we have liberation through three ways of mind.
Yes. Yes.
So this emptiness was one.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So. Do we look at all these three empty, while you are doing it, the impermanence, the
no, answer? No, not necessary. Not necessary. You don't need to purposely drive your mind to look at a particular one, but rather we have sort of inherent inclination towards any of these, and let it happen. So it's our duty is simply to show the process. So, which point or which aspect getting more prominence internally, we don't know actually.
Because you just touched on non-self when you were explaining that last bit.
Yeah.
You also spoke on impermanence. So, those are two of the three you spoke about last time, you know,
Bhante? Yes.
You touched on impermanence and also on non-self.
Right.
So either of it or both or whatever comes.
So we don't need to restrict the mind. So either process, any of these processes are all right. and let the process happen naturally. We don't need to artificially force the mind to go and do this and that. So,
and in this phase, we are also, though subtle or otherwise, we are aware of our breath. Would you say that's correct? Because we are breathing anyway, we can't be dead.
True, but we may not experience the breathing. Our attention is fully focused on the, now say, if you are experiencing the mental states, mental factors, actually at that time the mind is extremely refined and concentrated on those, so we may not experience breathing. Breathing may happen, definitely. Breathing is happening, but not experiencing.
Yeah, but it's in the background.
Sure, definitely.
You can be aware of it, isn't that right?
Yes, you can't be aware of it, but it is there. Point is there are so many other processes available, but only what we are paying our attention is the one we get understand. Now without attention, those may not come under our scrutiny, or those may not come under our attention, come under our investigation. There are so many other processes available, but we haven't paid attention to them. Attention, attention is one important factor for us to understand something. If attention is missing, even though the processes are there, we are ignorant about them.
That very refined, pure state, the breath is out of the picture altogether.
Exactly. Yes. Because the body very much like disappeared altogether. Now the mind is only experiencing mental states. That's all. Now, say for example, it is not difficult to understand. Now, say for example, suppose you are doing anapanasati and you are watching the breath. So while you are watching the breath, you are paying very close attention. Then only you can understand, okay, this is the beginning of the in-breath, the middle of the in-breath, this is the end of the in-breath. So it doesn't mean that all the other sensations, all the other, things are completely disappeared. And even in the environment, there may be so many other things available. But our full attention is drawn to the breath and to the in-breath. So we have let go of all the other things, forgotten about all the other things, and we are fully dedicated just to observe the in-breath. Similar thing happens here. So there are various bodily processes available, but our attention is not gone there. Only to the mental factors now we are paying attention.
Because anyway, by that time the breath has got very, very subtle anyway.
That is also true. Yes.
But we can, off and on, we can be aware of that subtlety.
Correct, yes.
I mean, you can't, the gross has gone off now by then.
Yes.
When the mind is in a finer, refined state, right?
Yes. I mean, when mind is in a very refined concentration, breathing has to happen very smoothly. That is natural.
Yes. Okay, Bhante, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for the great discussion. For the next question, I'd like to invite.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you also for answering my email. Bhante, my question is regarding this, but I just wanted to see whether you could make a parallel. Now, your discussion is that there is rising and passing away, it passes away so fast, all these things. It is like a stream, it's like an electric current almost, so fast.
Correct.
And can you draw a parallel to Bhanganya, jnana at this stage?
No, Bhanga is nothing but you are looking at only the passing away side.
No, both. I mean, rising and passing away go both, and it just falls, like a Bhanga Jnana is only for passing away, is that right?
Correct, yeah. Now, say, Now, when you are seeing both rising and passing away, we call it as the Udayabhyayana.
Right.
So, but when your attention is more focused on the passing away side, now you are forgetting about the rising part, rather only see the passing away side. And then the prominence is given to the passing away, bhanga, nirodha. So then what we call as nirodhanupassana. So again and again, what one watching is not the arising, but the passing away. So one's mind is so refined, so fairly familiarized with this passing away side. So the bhanga is the one, that passing away side is the one now become prominent, more emphasized. So that is we call as bhanga jnana.
If you see the dissolution of these things, what is that called?
We can explain in different ways. So one explanation is, dissolution can be considered as bhanga also. So things are passing away.
Awesome.
So you can't right. have something permanent. But on the other hand, now typically we have the notion of compactness. Now if you consider the body, so we perceive the body as something permanent, something unique, and something compact. We consider it as one object. That's a huge object, say 40 kilogram object. With this tall, this long. So likewise, we have a kind of a view of compactness. But with the practice, this compactness starts to dissolve. So now you can't recognize kind of a boundary. Now you can't recognize kind of a solidity in the body. Now everything has sort of converted into kind of a mass of, particles or kind of energies. So there, one can say, okay, kind of a knowledge of dissolution has happened.
Now, can you, from here, Bhante, can you please extend to what was taught today?
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, now, actually, that is why we talk in the vipassana. So, you may experience emptiness through dissolution. Now,
that's what I wanted to find out.
Correct. Now, suppose you are doing elements meditation, Dhatu Manasikara.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the beginning, you start with, I am meditating, I am practicing. Mm-hmm. So, this is the wrong conventional notion we have. And as we continue our practice, then we slowly understand, okay, there are various element characteristics available. There is no me or person here, but just element characteristics available. Those are hardness, smoothness, roughness, smoothness, hardness, softness, heaviness, lightness, fluidity, movement, heat, and cold. So likewise, those are the very fundamental element characteristics available, nothing else. So that is a kind of a deeper understanding. So that itself is a kind of a dissolution. Because we previously have had a very strong, solid personality view, and now that has dissolved. Now what is available now is just a very elementary understanding or elements understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding of about the elements. And it is, you can understand it with respect to your own body and to the others as well. So you are applying it internally and to the externally. So everywhere now you can see it's nothing but elements. So this is also a kind of a understanding or knowledge of dissolution. And
right.
that actually really disturbed the process of self, solidity.
Right.
Because we consider the body as me. Body belongs to me. Body as I. Body as myself. But there is no body right now. What is available is a very, kind of a continuous processes of elements. Now, these elements are also not particles, really. They are actually showing some sort of an activity. Hardness is not something, you can't say hardness is an element. Or rather, hardness is a particle. Rather, hardness is something arising and passing away. Heat is not an element. Heat is not a particle. But heat is something arising and passing away. Now your attention is now further drawn to that common characteristics. Even though these characteristics are manifesting, they're quickly arising and passing away. Now, even further, this understanding of dissolution may further refine, and understanding of non-self further refine, and with that you may go into emptiness. So, at the very early stages also, your mind may jump to emptiness, and even at the very refined further understanding of impermanence, suffering and non-self, there also your mind may jump into emptiness. So actually it's very difficult to say, I mean, the only mind has to stay or other wait till you understand, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, that you have to wait till that you need to understand non-self. Even at the very early stages, when the compactness view disappear and dissolve, and you understand just nothing but elements, even at that time the compactness view, the solidity has dissolved, even that one may understand strongly there is no person here, there is no soul here. With that with that understanding, mind might can jump into emptiness. Possible. That is also possible.
Thank you, Pante.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is the point that I wanted to have clarified by somebody, but I didn't know how to explain it. And the opportunity arose when you taught this sutta to us today.
Mm-hmm.
I could pick it up from there.
Right.
I am very grateful to you. Thank you very much, Pante.
Okay. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, I believe that's the last question that we've received.
Okay, thank you very much for the active participation. Then actually we have spent about 1 hour and 15 minutes. So with today's sutta discussion, so we were able to accumulate some merits. So let's share these merits with all the past relatives, all the beings who are in need of merits. We'll recite the traditional verses. එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පatti සිද්ධියා එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්මේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පatti සිද්ධියා එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්මේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පatti සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු